Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. How are you, Wilner?
Can't complain. How about you?
Doing all right. How'd you spend your morning?
I worked for a little while, and then I took my son, who's 8 years old, took him to a protest in the neighborhood, Black Lives Matter protest. Peaceful. I was confident there was not going to be tear gas.
Yeah.
So, thought he made a sign. We went, hung out till he got really hungry, and then we left.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And there was a lot of kids there. It was good for him to see, there's a lot of high school kids, college kids, and I thought it was good for him to see this is not just adults that are getting involved.
How did you explain to him what was going on or what the purpose of the protest was? Because I've wrestled with our little ones, whether how much of that can they grasp?
Yeah, it's a tough situation, right, when they're that young. But, we talked to him about equality and the importance of equality and what this country's all about, and a little bit about what happened to George Floyd and some other past instances. And he gets it. We talked to him about some of the protests turning violent. He wondered why cities needed to have curfews. If you're allowed to protest, and that's your right, why is there a curfew? I thought that was a very good question.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. All right, the Alabama program's got a little cluster of positive tests in COVID-19. We saw Oklahoma State have a player. There are going to be some hiccups and speed bumps, aren't there, on the way to a possible season?
It could be like two steps forward, one back, two forward, two back, right? I think it's going to be a little bit, bumpy's a good word, right? And it could be bumpy. The bumps could happen at any point. It could happen the day before a game, day before the season opener. Could happen when training camp starts. Could happen multiple times. The whole key is going to be, are the schools going to test enough, and are they going to have good contact tracing? I think the contact tracing probably will be in pretty good shape, because that's something that the football staffs can watch closely. But the testing is a little bit out of their control. It depends on the university and the state situation. And they are, the presumptions that everyone's making now about training camp and the season are based on an assumption that the testing's going to be more widespread and accurate, and the response time will be rapid in 2 months compared to where it is now. Because if there's no change in the testing, then the season is in dire jeopardy. But if it improves, I think they've got a real chance.
Do you think the Pac-12 will test more often than other conferences?
Well, it's a good question. I will be curious to see if the Pac-12 is going to keep a uniform policy in place all the way through the start of the regular season. My guess is that they will try if the test, if every state and every campus has enough tests available to do it, right? I mean, that's part of the issue. Certainly, compared to other conferences, I would expect in this matter, the Pac-12 is going to be out ahead. They are pretty good, as good as anybody about student athlete welfare issues. You know, they've got a really good medical advisory team, and you know they're going to test them when they get back and keep testing them every week. And it's crazy that some of the conferences didn't think you needed to test asymptomatic kids. It's just crazy.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. I was talking about this in the last segment, but I kind of feel like we're going to have a really weird season. And I think coaches that are more like Mario Cristobal, who sort of, you know, he's going to find a way, right? You put up a fence, he's going to climb it, or he's going to cut through it, or he's going to crawl under it. I mean, that's his mentality. He's got a little Navy SEAL in him. I kind of feel like this is the kind of season that he'll thrive in, because I think it's going to be unlike anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good thought. The impact of the personality of the coach has on, you know, the team being able to deal with all of the bumps and the challenges that are unprecedented. You do have to have that. You know, it's kind of like Tim Robbins in Shawshank when he, you know, crawls through a mile of you know what. I mean, that's kind of what it's going to be like. And you want a guy like Cristobal for sure. Tropical storm Cristobal.
The conference, when Chip Kelly was winning, did he benefit, you think, from USC and Washington not being on their game? And I'm looking now around the conference. I'm wondering, with Jimmy Lake at Washington, if, you know, they're going to take a little lull here, maybe. Will that benefit Oregon? And USC and Clay Helton, I think that thing is just, it's been put off. It's like they punted and, you know, there'll be a decision made in another year. I kind of feel like we have a similar circumstance to maybe when Kelly, a decade ago, sort of made his run.
Yeah, Chip's, if I'm not mistaken, Chip's first year as head coach was Pete Carroll's last year at SC. And SC at that point, 2009, were kind of dipping a little bit. Stanford had that's the year Stanford went down there and walloped them. And Oregon, I think, ended up in the Rose Bowl that year, the 2009 season. It certainly does, you know, the kind of the big picture competitive landscape in the conference, it certainly does depend a little bit on which state USC's in. And I think that, you know, they could be, I think SC's going to probably be pretty darn good this year, but long, you know, if you're looking out 3 to 5 years, what program is best positioned to thrive through the next 3 to 5 years? It's probably Oregon at this point. You know, we'll see what Jimmy Lake can do in Seattle. I don't know that Arizona State is ready to be a consistent player for the conference title. Stanford is taking a step back. It does seem like this is a very good moment in time for the Ducks.
John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. Washington with Jimmy Lake. Let's focus specifically there. How much is Chris Peterson out of the picture there? How much will his influence still stick around and linger? I mean, you certainly see that when coaches leave. It's not like it falls right off the cliff. But what is Jimmy Lake facing there? How good do you think Washington will be now and maybe in the next 2 or 3 years as a cycle?
You know, I'm not sure how good they're going to be. I think that they're going to have some, maybe a little bit step back this year for sure, just because they lost, step back from where they were at their height, maybe more along the lines of where they were last season. You know, the thing about Peterson is the culture that he put in place, accountability, all that kind of thing, that is as good as you get in college football. And that is, I would think, is going to carry over at least for the first few seasons with Lake, because so many of the guys were recruited by Peterson and are used to his way of doing things. And Lake is not going to veer from that. The issue to me is, you know, are they going to recruit the same kind of kids? And I think that Lake could end up going after maybe a little bit edgier type of player personality. They certainly have a great chance. Seattle is loaded with five-star kids, and I think we're going to know in the next 9 months what that program is going to look like for the next few years, because if they can, you know, if they can get an impressive portion of those kids in Seattle, they're going to be in good shape. If they don't, if they lose those kids to other schools in the Pac-12 or to Ohio State or Alabama, then that's kind of going to maybe be an indicator that they're not going to get back up to where they were, you know, a few years ago.
Oklahoma State has fallout from the basketball corruption scandal. Will this touch the Pac-12 ultimately? I think Arizona's been wrapped up in this thing forever.
Yeah, forever's right. So is USC. I mean, it's been September, I want to say September of 2017 was when they announced the arrests and the bribery case. So I think what happened, if you're an Arizona fan or a Pac-12 fan who wants Arizona to be successful, probably not many of those, but the conference is better when Arizona's good. And what happened to Oklahoma State today is a warning, I think, for Arizona. Oklahoma State's assistant coach, Lamont Evans, pleaded guilty to bribery for basically the exact same amount of money that Arizona assistant Book Richardson pleaded guilty to. Exact same. And Oklahoma State got a one-year postseason ban, 3 years probation, multiple years of scholarship reductions. I mean, they got walloped. And, you know, Arizona not only has these basically the same dollar figure in terms of the bribes, but Sean Miller, the head coach, is more involved in the evidence that we've seen than the Oklahoma State's former coach was. So I think this is a warning to Arizona that it could get hit very hard.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. Scott Barnes had 23 positions in his athletic department that he will not fill. It cost about 16 real jobs, people that he had to lay off this week. He said it was the hardest thing he's ever had to do. I'm looking at an athletic department at Oregon State that has got to do a lot more with a lot less right now. In the Pac-12, as we talk about the disparity between the top-tier teams and maybe that group at the bottom that's just financially struggles all the time, they're the have-nots, is there a larger disparity in the Pac-12 than maybe in other conferences in the Power Five? Or is it just because we live it all the time and I'm watching the struggles of Oregon State, watching the struggles of Washington State, that I see it as a bigger deal here?
You know, I think part of it is that the teams at the bottom of the Pac-12 have less money, less revenue coming in than teams at the bottom of the other conferences. In terms of the disparity, you know, I'm thinking like Ohio State football compared to Rutgers. You know, that's a pretty big disparity. Alabama football compared to, you know, who you put at the bottom there, Kentucky football, you know, pretty big disparity. So I don't know that it's bigger, but the schools are kind of at the bottom of the revenue chain in the Pac-12 have less of that because of, you know, for a lot of reasons. And so, you know, they may have less margin for error. I mean, to me, the disparity in the Pac-12 is epitomized by what's going on what Route 99, right? I mean, it just seems like the gap between Oregon State and Oregon right now is not 45 minutes. It's like 45 hours is kind of how I feel. And a situation like this where, you know, everything gets tight, budgets get tight, the haves have a greater, by far, you know, their advantage expands over the have-nots.
You've got a Pac-12 championship game that a lot of people were excited that Allegiant Stadium in Vegas would be the site of the 2020 championship game. But if we really are going to have a college football season where there's distancing and the stands are half full, do you think the Pac-12 sticks with that, brings that game to Vegas, or do they call an audible here and say, all right, team with the best record hosts, because going to Vegas might not be the best idea?
I don't know what the contract would allow them to do, but you can certainly lay out a scenario in which it's better for everybody if that game is, is at a home site. Especially if it so happens to be, schools where it's a reasonable drive for fans. I haven't looked into it, and I would imagine the conference has kind of just got that on the list of questions it doesn't want to have to answer. And there are many these days, but certainly you can make the case, right? I mean, who at this, if there's no vaccine, how many people are going to fly into Vegas for that? I don't know. Probably not that many. So it's a real good thought.
All right, Wilner, I appreciate you. And
can I ask real quick?
Yeah.
I saw your stuff, terrific stuff on Oregon State. But what I'm wondering is, are these cutbacks based on an assumption that they're going to have 50% capacity in the stadium? Because that's where, you know, teams are going to get into trouble if they're you know, overly optimistic on how many tickets they're going to be able to sell.
Two things I think are going on with that. One, I think Oregon State darn well knows that 50% of their stadium would be a success for them, because their season ticket base is like 14,000, and that's being generous. So I think that they know they're going to be able to get everybody in the stadium, and I think them budgeting at 50% is them going, hey, we're not going to have a problem. So I don't think that was the thing. What I learned from Scott Barnes was that they initially floated the idea of furloughs. They were hopeful they wouldn't have to remove any staff. Ultimately, they were just looking at the fact that their budget was going to get hit harder because they have a smaller budget, right? They're going to get hit a little harder than the Pac-12 teams or the Pac-12 athletic departments that are maybe at the top, like Washington, USC, Oregon. They've got a little bigger budget, but Oregon had to lay some people off too. So I think it's just a reality of what's going on with the pandemic and them projecting that, hey, we're going to have to operate a lot leaner. I even had the Trailblazers president, Chris McGowan, who told me they're going to have to do it with a lot fewer people moving forward. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how nimble can they be? Like, you know, can they be nimble? Because they can no longer march like an army in broad daylight. They've got to be like, you know, special forces now.
They do. That's a great way to put it. And the thing, football is that much more important now, right?
Yes.
That much more solve for football, like Scott Barnes says. Who's making the decision? Is Ed Ray still in charge, or is he
Ed Ray,
stepped down yet?
He's still in charge. He's there till the end of June. He's he's going to hand it. That's a question I have for you. F. King Alexander, and I got to pause between the F and the King. F. King Alexander,
like taking Warren character.
Yeah, taking over. He's leaving LSU for Oregon State. Like, look, I love Oregon State. But if you're leaving LSU for Oregon State, I'm kind of going, are you running from something? What do you know about F. King Alexander, and how much did he have to do with the success of LSU athletics?
Well, I mean, you know, he was there when he hiring Ed Orgeron, right, getting rid of Les and hiring Ed Orgeron. He did encounter some issues down there with boosters, and I think that he had some issues with some of the politicians. But I have been told that you know, the state politics in Louisiana when it comes to higher education are very difficult to manage, more difficult than in some of the other SEC states. And my guess is he just decided that's it. I'm done here. It's interesting, you know, the tenure for college presidents and chancellors these days is much closer to what it is for a head coach or an athletic director than what it used to be. I mean, they're churning every 3, 4, 5 years, you're getting change at the top. And it didn't used to be like that, but there's so many pressures now and so many stakeholders that you've got to satisfy that, you know, you just kind of lose your leverage after a little while. And I think that's kind of what happened down there.
I'll be curious to see how it affects Scott Barnes, how it affects the athletic department. I'm not 100% sold that Scott Barnes is the guy to lead Oregon State out of this. I'm waiting for him to do something where I go, that's his signature move. Am I asking too much of an AD to have a signature move? Like, he's hired Jonathan Smith. I think that's the right move, but there's no punctuation mark on that yet.
No, there's not, but that's going to be it, I think. You know, that hiring your football coach is the most important thing you're doing, really. Other than, you know, managing your culture and the academics component, you know, fundraising. But hiring your football coach is right at the top, and I think that, you know, that's going to be how Scott Barnes' tenure is going to be judged in Corvallis, is Jonathan Smith.
All right, so he...
It's as simple as that.
Jonathan Smith was at Washington calling the plays. He's an alum at Oregon State. When Gary Anderson left, All of us sort of looked and said, well, Jonathan Smith seems to be the leading candidate here. Scott Barnes paid a search firm $200,000 to help, you know, in that search. Am I unfair to criticize Barnes for spending that money, or, you know, do you need to do that as an AD to make that hire bulletproof?
You don't have to do it as an AD, and there have been some good hires that have been made without the use of a search firm. You know, I don't know how much of that was from on high. Like, how much did Ed Ray, folks in the system, top level of the system, insist that they hire a search firm? I don't know, but yeah, you could certainly wonder. You got your alum who's right up the street, and he's working at one of the best programs in the West, and it was, you know, a pretty obvious hire all along. So, I mean, I don't think it's totally unfair. I would just wonder if it was that hiring the firm was Barnes' decision or not. But, I think Jonathan Smith, it feels like the right guy, doesn't it?
Agreed. I totally agree.
And the key for him is going to be, like it was for Mike Riley, is, you know, the evaluation. You have such little margin for error with your player evaluations, whether it's transfers or high school seniors. And the better you are with that, the more chance you've got to succeed. Because if you missing on a recruiting class there sets you much farther back than missing on a recruiting class at Oregon.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. Follow him on Twitter, @WilnerHotline. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Be safe up there.
Well, you too. There he is. Good stuff there. Scott Barnes spent $200,000 to get Jonathan Smith, or Oregon State spent the $200,000, rather. Feels like a waste to me, but I'm not in the making a bulletproof hire business. All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Today's the last day. You can go to AdrianaRocks.com if you want to wish Alabama Adriana well. It's not her last day on the show, but it's her last day graduation party day. Virtual graduation party day. Spit it out already. You can make a graduation gift. You can just send her a note. You can do all of that at AdrianaRocks.com. Adriana has two N's, in case you're wondering. The Culligan Water Cooler Report. We do it every day. Meet me at the
water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right, here's the question. I want to throw this out for the room. Damian Lillard shows up downtown Portland marching shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm with protesters, Black Lives Matter. How much does it matter that a star athlete shows up and protests in that way? Does it matter more that he's there? Do you want athletes to have that kind of presence? Or should he be treated like everyone else who is protesting in that, hey, it's great that you're here, but you mean the same as the person next to you? Kick that around.
I mean, I think it's just his star power and who he is in Portland to a lot of people. I don't think that it's right necessarily that he got all of this attention. I don't really know how much attention he got, but I'm sure it was a lot. I don't think it's necessarily right, but I think that it's good that he's showing up.
We always criticize athletes or celebrities if they don't take an interest and educate themselves on issues. This is something Damian Lillard cares
about. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.